Now, the National Trust has published its yearly weather and wildlife review and says unsettled weather patterns over the last 10 years have resulted in a decline in bee and butterfly numbers. It's not all bad, though. Farmers had a great year for livestock grazing and haymaking, and the apple harvest was one of the best. Nature and wildlife specialist Matthew Oates joins me on the line to give us his take on the highs and lows. Happy New Year, Matthew. Welcome to the show.
Yes, looking forward to it.
Yes. The National Trust, you've been reviewing weather and wildlife for some years, and the idea behind it all is that you basically want to understand how weather patterns affect wildlife and nature. And, well, the year started wet, then we had quite a cold, wet spring, and, of course, this led to high grass growth across the country. Mm-hmm. Why did the strong grass growth affect butterfly and bees species
much? Just to recap, you're absolutely right. Last winter was very mild, which meant actually a lot of vegetation, especially the grass, never really stopped growing and never really got choked off. And then spring was actually a bit slow, March and April, a bit cold. And then it became sort of mild and wet, or warm and wet. And everything grew and grew and grew. And we've actually had a run of several strong grass growth seasons on the trot. And the impact of that on many of our what I call warmth-loving winged insects, is a bit of a mouthful, but butterflies, moths, bees, hoverflies, bumblebees, crickets and grasshoppers, those sort of creatures, we like them. It's really quite phenomenal for a variety of reasons. Firstly, a lot of our more specialist, rarer insects actually breed on low-growing plants in short turf, you know, like on the North Downs, on the short turf there, or actually in pockets of bare ground. And literally what happened in, and it's been happening for a few years, but it was especially strong in 2016, was those short turf swards, as we call them, short turf grassland, and the pockets of bare ground literally just got swamped out by rampant vegetation growth, largely by coarse grasses. Okay?
Yeah, I get it. So you're basically saying that, I mean, the strong grass growth, it's badly affected, you know, a lot of these species, butterflies, bees, because they breed and they feed on small herbs and grasses and wildflowers, and they've just basically been crowded out by coarse grasses.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, there's many plants and insects that prefer short turf grassland, and you were talking about the North Downs. Is the common blue butterfly one of them that's been affected?
Oh, yeah, the common blue butterfly actually says an awful lot. I mean, it should be common. It's no longer common. It's at best widespread, although there are, you know, still good populations on many of the downs, for example. But it used to be a meadowland butterfly, and absolutely right, it breeds mainly on a little plant called birdsfoot trefoil, which we sometimes call egg and bacon, which is a short turf plant, but regularly gets just crowded out, swamped over by these coarse grasses, cocksfoot, false oak grass, upright brome grass, tall grass, those sort of things, and that nasty thuggish grasses. And that's what happened for it in 2016. And other little more rarer species like the silver-spotted skipper butterfly and the Adonis blue butterflies, which live on the North Downs, you know, Juniper Hill, Cully Hill, Box Hill, Denbys, places like that.
And you know what, though, Matthew? I mean, high grass growth, and I understand that grass grew at a rate almost a third faster than in previous years last year.
Yeah.
Well, it's good news for farmers making hay in many parts of the country. Do that include Surrey as well?
It is genuinely good news for farmers, providing two things. It's not just the quantity of the grass which they want, but actually the quality. And if the grass has actually had too much wet in it, too much rain on it, it's actually the sugar contents, which are crucial for farming, can be right down. And the other problem they have, of course, is having the right weather conditions to actually cut and harvest it. In many parts of Britain, certainly less so the southeast and Surrey, last year the weather was so foul that they weren't able to make hay, and they even had problems bagging it up for silage. So, you know, it's hard to satisfy farmers. Mm.
And I
can understand why.
The National Trust, you've worked very closely with farmers and graziers to get grazing levels right for plants and insects. And as you said, I mean, it can be a bit of a struggle, can't it? Because it's also this, the type, you know, the conditions. It's not just about the growth, is it?
Yeah.
And does that mean that maybe that you encourage farmers to put more cattle on fields to take advantage of the excess grass? Does that help?
Well, that's what we've been wanting to do these last few years. To be honest, we haven't really quite had enough grazing animals on the downs or meadows or whatever to keep up with this rampant grass growth. But if you go back a few years, around about 1990, when we had a run of dry summers and also very high rabbit populations, it was actually quite the reverse, because a lot of places, particularly on the downs, Juniper Hill, Colley Hill, Reigate, was heavily rabbited, so much so that there was hardly any vegetation evident on it, and some of our longer grassland butterflies and other insects, their populations have actually collapsed. So what it says is that our grasslands are hugely dynamic, which you wouldn't really expect. You expect, oh, downs have always looked like this. Well, they haven't. The annual weather really does influence what's going on there at the moment. But we're in this run of strong grass, strong vegetation growth years.
Let's actually review the decade in terms of, you know, weather-wise. I mean, when generally speaking, winters are becoming milder and summers are kind of wetter, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, and you have actually said, you've been quoted as saying, this could have a devastating effect long-term. It can affect warm-loving insects, as we said, and bird and bat predators, as well as low-growing plants. And over the last 50 years or so, is it right that more than half of UK species have actually declined?
Yeah, well, our wildlife is actually incredibly well monitored for the very good reason that we actually have a phenomenal number of really good naturalists in the UK, and we need more, by the way. And also, we have extremely good recording schemes as well. Butterflies, for example, have been very closely monitored since 1976, when the UK Butterfly Monitoring Scheme was set up by government scientists, and it's now run in partnership with Butterfly Conservation. So we really do know what's going on with butterflies very well, and they are, for example, extremely well monitored, surveyed, and their populations are recorded annually in Surrey. And a lot of other insect groups are joining in as well.
Let's open up that discussion, actually, because, I mean, I love butterflies. I know nothing about them, but I love them. But the thing that one thing I don't like very much is wasps, I have to say. And again, mild winters, wet summers, it's caused wasp numbers to slump, as well as the meadow land insects that we've spoken about, the common blue butterfly, which isn't so common, as you just said. And this can actually have quite a knock-on effect on the invertebrates and the birds and bees that eat them. What affects insects today? You know, it could affect us tomorrow. Is that not right? I mean, how is this going? Where is this going?
Yeah, well, us entomologists have been saying that for some time, because insects are so fundamental in the web of life, in the food chain, and they are so responsive to fluctuations or changes in weather and climate, and their populations do boom and bust, and we need to readily admit that.
Let's add to the mix, actually, because you've just literally touched on that. Climate change, it's had an effect on weather and wildlife in the last 10 years, hasn't it? I mean, the growing season has extended by almost a month, according to the Met Office.
I mean, tremendously, and I mean, our gardeners, National Trust gardeners, are very, very aware of that. The way things have changed. Now, well, it's difficult to really prove climate change as an actuality in the UK, because our climate is and always has been very variable, strongly seasonal as well. You know, we've had mild winters before. 1989, 1990 was a mild winter. We have had runs of sort of mild, wet summers before. But what's happened in recent years is we keep getting these extreme weather events, and such a month goes down as the mildest, the wettest, the stormiest on record. For example, December 2015 was by far the mildest December ever recorded, and this last Christmas Day was the second mildest Christmas Day on record for the whole of the UK, after one in 1920. You know, but we keep having these extreme weather events, many of which are actually rather negative extremes. You know, it begs the question of when the term global warming was originally conceived, a lot of people in the UK thought, oh, yippee, we're going to get a Mediterranean climate.
I was one.
I've lived my entire life in the wrong climate zone. I'm Mediterranean by nature. I'm a sunshine person. And, of course, we're just not getting that. It's our winters are getting milder. Children are not playing in the snow any longer because we don't see it anymore, with the exception of December 2010, which was very traditional, very snowy. We're just not getting what we thought we might be getting under the
absolutely
scenario.
Let's talk about something positive if we can.
Yeah.
I mean, September, for many reasons that were perhaps not so great, but it was the second warmest since Met Office records began in 1910, and it basically meant, from your point of view, that National Trust visitors were treated to some really quite lovely autumn colour. So that was one positive thing for them, and maybe munching some apples as well, more apples, really good apple harvest, wasn't there?
Yeah, now, and fruit and seeds and nuts.
Yes, lots.
In the wild, generally.
We won't talk about the slugs, but now it's 2017. We have to sort of think onwards and upwards. Many of us want to start the new year with resolutions to get more fresh air and basically experience new places. And for us in Surrey, there are so many things around. There's lots of delights out there. What's out there on offer for visitors to National Trust places, Matthew?
An awful lot, and do please visit. The Trust owns, you know, many of the loveliest parts of Surrey, both in terms of the downs and the woods, also gardens and houses. So there is very much something.
Let's talk about somewhere nearer, because I'm just thinking we're our studio and our catchment area is in Merstham, and lots of people like to have sort of walks in the locality. It's quite nice to go further afield, and you've got so many things on offer. But if we keep it kind of nearby, I'm thinking places that I might have been to, like Reigate Hill and Gatton Park. The Gatton Park Walk, for example, that was designed by Lancelot Capability Brown. And that's a beautiful walk. It's not too arduous, is it? It's definitely something, if people want to blow away the cobwebs in the new year, it's definitely something that's kind of on our doorstep, isn't it? And it's a wonderful place to go and walk in.
Yes, absolutely. As I said, there is something for everyone in Surrey, and in particular in your part of Surrey. There's short walks, there's easy walks, there's long walks, there's arduous walks on steep slopes. There's walks you can do for an hour, there's walks you can do for a whole day. So it is incredibly well networked area you live in, and you've got a varied geology, and you've got rivers as well.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you could enjoy views, take in some history, learn about, literally on our doorstep, we've got Reigate Fort, we've got Gatton Park, like I just said. And if you start off in Ray Lane car park, you can't kind of go too wrong. And if you go basically onto the National Trust site, it gives you tips and instructions on the route to follow. And there's maps.
Lots of walks. Downloadable walks on the National Trust website. We're very, very big on them indeed.
And don't forget Harewoods. Yeah. That's hidden woodlands, green meadows, ponds, ancient commons. It's wonderful. And you could also visit Outwood Common and find there's ancient oaks. Apparently there's some trees there that are over 200 years old. There's wildlife in hedgerows and meadows and woodland. It's absolutely wonderful. It's all on our doorstep. It's a veritable smorgasbord, really, isn't it?
It's Surrey is a top county for wildlife and for landscape, and indeed for trees. It's such a well-treed county. And it was just, you know, quite remarkable considering how many people live in it here and how sort of busy it is in terms of traffic. But it remains a fantastic place to live. So be proud of your...
Well, we are indeed.
Very
it's a beautiful
proud
place.
Surrey.
Beautiful place. Matthew,
I love visiting it.
Thank you so much for talking to me today. Let's hope, I don't know, pulses of unsettled weather maybe stop becoming the norm for us. I don't know, we can have that hope maybe in the new year, can't we?
Oh, to have a decent spring and a long, hot summer.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Matthew, for coming on to chat to us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was Matthew Oates, and he's from the National Trust, and he's a nature expert there. Very, very interesting guy. And if you do want to go on any of the walks that we've just really just touched on, then do go onto the National Trust site. It does, as I said before, give tips and instructions on routes to follow, and there's maps and all that kind of stuff. It's all very, very user-friendly.